Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Text? Chapter? 821, page 437. So we'll read the Sanskrit together. Vyaktokshara ityuktas tamahu paramam gatim yam prapya nanivartante tadhama paramam mama. Translation together. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. Text 22, together. Purusha sapara parta bhaktya labhyastvananyaya yasyantastani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. Text 23. Yatra kale tvanavritim avritim chaiva yoginaha prayata yanti tam kalam vakshami bharatarshava. Translation. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times passing away from this world the yogi does or does not come back. Text 24. Agnir jyotir aha shukla shanmasa utarayanam tatra prayata gacchanti brahma brahma vido janaha. Translation. Those who know the supreme Brahman attain that supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery god in the light at an auspicious moment of the day during the fortnight of the waxing moon or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. Text 25. Tumo ratris tata krishna shanmasa dakshinayanam tatta chandramasam jyotir yogi prapya nivartate. Translation. The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. Text 26. Shukla krishne gati hyete jagata shashvate mate ekaya yatyanavritim anyaya vartate punaha. Translation. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from the world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when one passes in darkness, he returns. Text 27. Naite shruti parta janam yogi muyati kashchanam tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjuna. Translation. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. Text 28. Vedeshu yagyeshu tapasu chaiva daneshu yat punya palam pradishtam atyeti tat sarvam idam viditva yogi param stanam upaiti chadyam. Translation. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these And at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Text 1. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Tute Guyatamam Pravaksham Yanusuyave Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam Yajgyatva Mokshase Shubhat. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence." Text 2. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha Vagamam Dharmyam Susukam Karatam Avyayam. Translation. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. And finally, text 3. Ashwadadhana purusha dharmasyasya parantapa aprapyamam nivartante mrityu saṃsāra vartamani. Translation. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in the material world. Going back to text 21. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The supreme abode of the Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described in the Brahma Samhita as Chintamani Dhamma, a place where all desires are fulfilled. The supreme abode of Lord Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, is full of palaces made of touchstone. There are also trees called desire trees that supply any type of eatable upon demand, and there are cows, known as Surabhi cows, which supply a limitless supply of milk. In this abode, the Lord is served by hundreds of thousands of goddesses of fortune, Lakshmis, and He is called Govinda, the primal Lord and the cause of all causes. The Lord is accustomed to blow His flute, Vainam Kvanantam. His transcendental form is the most attractive in all the worlds. His eyes are like lotus petals, and the color of His body is like the color of clouds. He is so attractive that His beauty excels that of thousands of cupids. He wears saffron cloth, a garland around His neck, and a peacock feather in His hair. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives only a small hint of His personal abode, Goloka Vrindavan, which is the supermost planet in the spiritual kingdom. A vivid description is given in the Brahma Samhita, Vedic literatures, Katha Upanishad 1.3.11, state that there is nothing superior to the abode of the Supreme Godhead, and that that abode is the ultimate destination, Purushan na param kinchit sa kashta parama gatihi. When one attains to it, he never returns to the material world. Krishna's supreme abode and Krishna Himself are non-different, being of the same quality. On this earth, Vrindavan, 90 miles southeast of Delhi, is a replica of that supreme Goloka Vrindavan, located in the spiritual sky. When Krishna descended on this earth, he sported on that particular tract of land known as Vrindavan, comprising about 84 square miles in the district of Mathura, India. Speaking here about the Lord's abode. Rajendra. So, his abode is also transcendental. It's of the same quality as the Lord himself. It's the manifestation of his internal potency. The Lord has different energies. Parasha Shaktir Vividhaiva Shuyate. He has the internal energy and the external energy and marginal energy. And the spiritual world is a manifestation of the internal energy and the Vishnu tattvas. They are in that category, internal. Vishnu tattva. And there is the external energy, this material world, made up of eight primary energies, Bhumira, Ponalo, Vayu, Kamano, Bhatirevacha, Ahankara, Itiyame, Bina, Prakritir, Ashtada. And then there is the Tatastha Shakti, the individual living entities. They're not external and they're not internal. They're marginal. And being marginal, they can identify, they can choose where they want to live. They can choose to live in the internal potency of the Lord, in Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha, or they can choose to live in the material energy. That's their choice. Just like a citizen in living in the state, he can live in the civil society, the free society, or he can live in the prison. That is his choice by his consciousness, by his behavior. He's marginal. Everyone has that choice. So similarly, everyone has the choice, every soul can decide whether he wants to live in the spiritual abode or he wants to live in the material abode of the Lord. They're both kingdoms. Both the kingdom of God. But one kingdom of God is superior. There's no suffering. Here, there's lots of suffering going on. So, the intelligent persons, they live there. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Param Sada Pasyanti Surya. The intelligent persons, they fix their mind. I'm going back to that place. Why should I stay here where there is suffering at every step? Padam Padam Yad Vipadam Nate Sham. Text 22. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is greater than all, is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. Yes, Brahma Samhita also says, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitabhi Stabhiri Eva Nijaro Pataya Kalabhi Goloka Eva Niva Satya Kilatma Bhuto Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Even though he's situated in his own abode, in the spiritual world, still he expands as super soul in the heart of every living entity. We've been discussing how he's even in the heart of the soul. Not just the heart of the body, but the heart of the soul also. And even though he's there in Goloka, he's not absent, he expands himself. And he even enters into every atom. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. This is how all-pervading the Lord is. Every atom He's there. He's even inside the atom. So you cannot hide from Krishna because he's everywhere. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. He's all pervading. Vishnu means all pervading. He's everywhere. He sees everything. He knows everything. That's why he's such a good manager. We cannot compete because a good manager is one who's he's on the scene. He knows what's going on. He can make proper decisions. But how can we compete with him? He's all-pervading. Therefore, he's the greatest manager. In another place, Arjuna says, your eyes and hands and legs are spread everywhere. So yes, the living entities are everywhere, and also Paramatma is everywhere, and Brahman, that's all another feature of his impersonal feature. He has all kinds of energies. Text 23. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which, passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. So the yogi. Yogis are interested in transporting themselves sometimes to higher material planets, sometimes to the Brahmajyoti, sometimes to the spiritual planets. Yogi means one who's trying to link with the Supreme. So, they know that the soul is eternal. They know that the soul lives after the demise of this body. They're completely aware of that. And they have the power to direct the soul. By controlling the life airs, by controlling the breathing process, they can direct the soul to another destination, as described here. We can read something about the purport. The unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Lord, who are totally surrendered souls, do not care when they leave their bodies or by what method. They leave everything in Krishna's hands and so easily and happily return to Godhead. The devotee doesn't care because he's protected by Krishna. Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashati. Krishna says, you may declare it boldly that my devotee is never vanquished. He's protected. So what is the need? Why should he worry about when he leaves the body? He's always thinking of Krishna anyway. Satatam kirtayantomam yatantascha drudivataha. He's always chanting. He's always glorifying. Everything he's doing is for Krishna. He doesn't have any separate interest. Just like let's say someone's working as an agent for the government. So does it matter where he is? No. If he's in the country, he's working for the government. If he's outside the country, he's on a special mission. And he's honored by the government, no matter where he is. Similarly, a devotee, Narayana Parasarve Nukataschana Bibhiti, Svarga Pavarga Narakeshu, Apitul Yata Darshana. Wherever he goes, he's working on behalf of the Lord. Therefore, he's the most dear to the Lord. Who could be more dear? Yogi's not more dear. Those who are doing there. Generally, the yogis are interested in their own benefit. They're certainly pure and they're elevated, but still they're mostly thinking of themselves. Bhajan and Nandis, they're doing their bhajan or their yoga. But the devotees, Paradukaduki, he's Vancha kalpaturbhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivachap Titanam Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo. The Vaishnavas, they're so kind to the fallen souls that they're always working on the arrangement of the Lord, trying to bring back the fallen souls, trying to save them. And that's Krishna's plan. He wants to save them. Paritranaya sarunam vinashaya tudu. He wants to save these fallen souls. And when someone takes up his work, then he's very pleased. Nachatasman manusheshu kaschin me priyakuttama. There's no one more dear to me than he. Text 24. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain the Supreme, that Supreme, by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God. In the light, at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. So the sun travels and has its... Of course, one travel is around Mount Meru. That's one movement, but it has another movement. It's also... It's also moving along with all the firmament around the pole star. So these movements are known to the yogis, and they know that certain times, according to the sun's movement, it's auspicious. Auspicious meaning that they can attain the higher planets and not have to come back. And other times, just like if you go to, say, you go to the border of another country, well, maybe it's not open all the time. Sometimes it's more auspicious. I remember once we went from Russia to the Ukraine. And we went to the border, and you had to wait over 12 hours at the border. That was inauspicious time of passing, because you can't get in very easily if you go at a different time. So that's a crude example. But the idea is, if one wants to go to a higher place, then there are certain times that are auspicious. And the yogi knows that. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, if one leaves the body at the designated time above, either accidentally or by arrangement, it is possible for him to attain the impersonal Brahmajyoti. So there are some yogis, they want to enter that Brahmajyoti. Neutral ground, no more suffering. There's no material suffering there. It's also not the best place because there's no spiritual varieties and ultimate bliss. But it is free from the material suffering. And for some people, that's the best that they can imagine. They can't imagine anything greater than that. Others who have no control, if by accident they leave at an auspicious moment, then they will not return to the cycle of birth and death. But otherwise, there is every possibility that they will have to return. Text 25. The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. Purport. In the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Muni mentions that those who are expert in fruitive activities and sacrificial methods on earth attain to the moon at death. These elevated souls live on the moon for about 10,000 years by demigod calculations and enjoy life by drinking somarasa. They eventually return to earth. This means that on the moon, there are higher classes of living beings though they may not be perceived by the gross senses. That's also an interesting statement, that one may go to the moon planet, but it doesn't mean that he'll be able to see the living beings there. Because in order to see them, one has to be very pure. This is described also in the Mahabharata, that when Lomasa Rishi was taking the Pandavas to the Himalayas because they were preparing to meet Arjuna. Arjuna had gone to Indraloka, and he was supposed to come back after 5 years. And so they were going there to meet him on Gandhamadana Mountain. And as they were going up, it was explained that unless very pure persons cannot go any, they cannot enter into these realms. They're not allowed to go further, just like the Himalayan mountains. We see only Himalayas up to 28,000 feet. 29,000. So we think that that's the extent. But according to the Bhagavatam, it's much higher than that. Thousands and thousands of miles high, according to Yojanas. And then beyond, the Himalayas are not the highest. And beyond that, then there's Gandhamadana, then there's Mount Meru. And on top of Mount Meru, there, which is in the center of the universe, there are the summer resorts, summer residents, Prabhupada called them, of the principal demigods. Indra's there, even Brahmapuri. Not Brahmaloka, but Brahmapuri. Satyaloka is another place. That's in the top of the universe. But Brahmapuri is on the top of Mount Meru. And Yamaraj has a place. And, different demigods. Kuvera has his place there. But not everyone can see them. They're not easily accessible. One has to be has to have performed many austerities, be very pure in his consciousness, otherwise he cannot see them. And he won't be able to even go there. So generally, Prabhupada would say about the moon. Moon is a heavenly planet. It's a Svargaloka, higher planetary system. So people, beings from this planet generally are not allowed to go there, especially if they're not pure. Now, in the case of Arjuna, he was very pure. Therefore, he was allowed to go. But our astronauts and cosmonauts are not so pure that are going there. So it's very unlikely that they'll be able to enter. And if they do enter, then it's unlikely they'll see anyone. Therefore, they'll say it's all desert. This is the explanation. Going on. Text 27. Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. There's a nice example of Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev was a great devotee, one of the Mahajans, 12 Mahajans. And aside from being a pure devotee, he also got a benediction from his father that he would not have to die until he wanted to die. But he was lying there on the bed of arrows, but also being a great yogi, he was waiting for an auspicious time to leave. So he waited for the sun and the stars, everything to be adjusted. But even more auspicious was that Krishna and all the other great sages, they came to see him personally at his time of departure. So that was really the auspicious moment, not the stars. The stars' adjustment, that was also auspicious, but more auspicious was Krishna's presence. He actually meditated on the beautiful form of Krishna's lotus face. That means that if one can remember Krishna, Ante Narayana Smriti, then his yoga is perfect. And if he can remember Krishna, then it doesn't matter what the stars' situation is, because what does auspiciousness mean anyway? Real auspiciousness means in relationship with Krishna, because Krishna is the ultimate auspiciousness. Auspiciousness means that which will take me to Krishna or remind me of Krishna. And if I'm already thinking of Krishna, then what do I need anything else? Auspicious or inauspicious, it doesn't make any difference. It has no meaning. Just like for Krishna, can there be anything inauspicious for Krishna? No. Let's say someone attacks Krishna, some big demon. We may say, this is really inauspicious. Why is it inauspicious? Do you think Krishna is going to be in danger? Do you think this big demon is going to be able to cause Krishna some harm? It's a joke. Now, for the rest of us, we may think, or even for the pure devotees. For example, when Kaliya, the serpent, had coiled around Krishna, so it appeared inauspicious. Mother Yashoda was looking at the portents. There were some symptoms of inauspiciousness. So everyone was getting frightened. So for them, it was inauspicious to have your child wrapped up in the coils of a huge snake. That's got to be inauspicious. What a horrible... They're trying to take care of their child. And if someone says, oh, Mother Yashoda, I've got a report for you. Your child is all bound up in a big snake in the lake over there. What could be more frightening, more terrible news to Mother Yashoda? There's nothing more terrible. So for her, it was inauspicious. But for Krishna, it wasn't inauspicious. It was a joke. It was fun. He got up and started kicking on the heads of this serpent and had a wonderful dance. He's famous for that dance, kicking on the heads of the serpent. He was having a good time. How about the time he entered the body of Agasura? This Agasura was a huge, another snake, python. He was an earth python, earth snake, whereas Kaliya was a water snake, two different types. So this Agasura had opened his mouth and he assumed a form. It was 8 miles long. He was related to Putana. She also had a big body like that, 8 miles. Brother and sister. Big bodies. So he had this, his mouth was open, and it didn't seem like a snake. It seemed like a big cave. And the cowherd boys, they all entered into the mouth of the serpent. They knew it was a serpent, more or less. But they said, well, it looks like fun. And maybe he'll swallow all of us, but then Krishna will come in and Krishna will save us. They were so fearless. They were willing to do anything. Completely carefree. They knew Krishna would save them even if they entered into this mouth of a huge serpent. Just see how much faith they have in Krishna. And Krishna, he reciprocates. As they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So because they have so much faith in Krishna, Krishna will never let them down. You could say he's even a little proud of that particular quality of his, that he will never allow his devotees to be vanquished. Even he's willing to break other promises, but that promise he won't break. Going on. Yes, we read that. 28. Now, text 1. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. So that's a very important point. Because you are never envious of me, Krishna says, therefore I will impart this most confidential knowledge to you. Therefore, if we want to get the most confidential knowledge from Krishna, then we have to become free from envy of Krishna. Free from envy of Krishna means we don't try to imitate him. We don't try to take his position. We understand that the enjoyment of everything is meant for him, and therefore we don't try to enjoy anything ourselves. And if we do try to enjoy anything ourselves, it means we're envious of Krishna. The only things we're allowed to enjoy are things that have been enjoyed by Krishna. That we can enjoy. For example, prasadam. We can enjoy prasadam because it has been given, it has been accepted by Krishna. Now it's prasadam. But if you try to enjoy bhoga, what happens, Bhaktarayan? Bhaktarayan? What happens if you try to enjoy bhoga? Why? All right. So, yes, if we try to enjoy bhoga, then we become implicated in sinful reactions. Because it's what happens if you try to enjoy someone else's property? You become criminal. You become punishable. If you go to someone's home and you say, oh, look at all these nice things here. Let me take them. If you take them, then you get in trouble. Similarly, if you try to enjoy bhoga, then it doesn't belong to you. It's Krishna's. But after Krishna has enjoyed it, and then he gives it to you, that is his way of showing his kindness. Then you can accept that. That's his gift. Prasadam is gift from Krishna. Prasad means mercy. But if you eat something that has not been accepted by Krishna, then you're a thief. And then you get the reactions for stealing. That means we're envious of Krishna. I want to eat something before I offer it to Krishna. Or if I don't care if it's offered to Krishna or not. What do you mean you don't care? It belongs to Krishna. How can you take his property? He didn't give you permission. It's like your father. If you go into his wallet and take the money out of his wallet or take his credit card and start spending on it, he won't be happy with you. You may say, well, Dad, I mean, after all, I am your son. I know you're my son, but if I give you something, then you can enjoy it. But if you just take it without asking, it's not right. He won't be pleased with you. Text 2, this knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion, it is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. So the preliminary qualification for receiving the most confidential knowledge is to be not envious of Krishna. But how can anyone be not envious of Krishna unless he's engaged in devotional service? So devotional service makes one not envious of Krishna. But no one can engage in devotional service unless he's not envious. So they go together. And the last text, those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Any questions? If you have strong faith in Krishna, does it mean you can embrace a tiger? Yes. There's many examples. Lord Chaitanya embraced. He was going there, dancing, slapping them. And there's even other devotees also who did that. Not only Lord Chaitanya, other great devotees, and they were not harmed. What about Haridasa Thakur? He was living with a big poisonous snake. But that doesn't mean that we can do it. That means that, yes, a perfectly pure devotee. What about Prahlad Maharaj? He was thrown into the boiling oil. He was put into the snake pit. He was put under the with the elephants to crush him. But he wasn't harmed because Krishna protected him. But it doesn't mean that we should go test out our faith, because probably our faith is not so strong, and we'll, if we throw ourselves in boiling oil, we'll probably burn. But Sita Devi, she walked into the fire and she was not harmed. Return? Yeah, if you want. Why not? Not, otherwise, it wouldn't be a place that one would want to go if he couldn't leave. You know, there has to be free will always for the pure souls. So if they want to leave, they can leave. Generally, the souls that go there don't want to leave because it's so nice. But there are some souls who make the mistake. Sometimes people ask, well, why, if it's so great, would one want to leave? And I always say, well, we made a mistake. It's possible for us to make mistakes. And that was a big one. But hopefully, we'll learn our lesson now. We're on the last leg of learning the lesson. Now we're in the human form of life. We're engaged in devotional service. We're in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. We're about to learn the lesson not to make this mistake again. You like this birth and death business? You like all these things? Going through different species? Or have you learned that this is not fun? So, therefore Krishna promises, once having attained, once going back, he'll not return again. That's his promise. You won't return again. You won't make the mistake again. Not necessarily. Well, it just means that they were so, you know how young boys are. You know how young boys are. They always like to explore different things. And if you see young boys, they're always, let's go there. Let's go in there. Some especially like forbidden place. You know, especially if it's like haunted house. Let's go. You want to go in the haunted house? Let's go. Huh? Come on. I don't know if we should go. Come on, let's go. So this is a haunted snake. So it was even more fun. But they knew Krishna was there and he would protect them. That's all. You don't have to try to dissect the pastime. It's just as it is, it's blissful. It's perfect as it is. On our what? On our faith. Because one who doesn't have faith in Krishna, he doesn't want Krishna. He doesn't want his protection. Krishna says, just call on me and I'll protect you. And he doesn't say, what do I need, Krishna? Who needs him? I'll protect myself. So Krishna, you know, he is a person. He does have... his own character, his own personality. If someone doesn't want him to come there, then okay. Prabhupada explained it very nicely. He said, actually, Krishna is giving everyone protection, even the non-devotees. He said, but they don't get the same kind of protection. He said, I'll protect you as far as possible. That's for the non-devotees. But for the pure devotees, there's no question of far as possible or something. He gives them all protection. You can't blame him. If there's a fire, then the father will come and try to save his own child first. You can't blame him for doing that. Afterwards, he'll save the other children, but first he has to save his own son. That's his duty. Thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.